Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
One stop. Here's what you get. Look at this. Honestly.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoy this so much. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's another edition of Mode Push, an American view of F1, right here, KSL Sports, KSL Podcasts, headquartered in Salt Lake City, Utah. Yes, two Utahns who have gotten into F1, and we're talking about it. Alex Keery, Dan Jimenez, of course, my illustrious co-host, as always, every week. Dan, what's up, man? How's everything?
Things are great. I just head spinning from the probably most news-filled week in F1 I can ever think of.
Oh.
Where do we start?
There was an actual race.
Oh, was there?
Since the last time
we
had a conversation. I guess maybe we should start there. And I guess, I mean, I don't know. We had some glimmer of hope in FP2. FP3 got a little bit more like, oh, Max is pretty good. And then when qualifying came around, we went, half second on the next fastest guy. I don't know. He was up almost a full second before the first lap was done. And I don't see any, and no one does, by the way. I heard the most dejected Toto Wolff that I've ever heard after that race when Max won. And it was, Max is in a totally different galaxy. He is in a totally different level. No, we are not anywhere near the pace. Max is in a totally different galaxy. So Max gets the win. Checo with a... the thing that's crazy is you finish second, but everyone goes, yeah, but you were 23.
Maybe 23 seconds, something like that.
And so somebody showed the real time when Max passed the finish line and then waiting for Checo when he passed the finish line. And it's embarrassing. Like, you're going, oh my goodness, it's still going. There's still something happening here. There's no way that I'm going to be able to do this. And it's just, we're going to do this all season long. So, Max, congrats on the World Drivers' Championship for 2024. Everybody else, where are you? What are you going to do?
Yeah, totally. It was, I mean, we got our hopes up, I think. I got my hopes up through the free practice sessions, and I should know better than that. But yeah, it was kind of once the race got like once things shook out 10 laps in, you look at the running order and you're like, this is how we started last year. Like there really isn't much of, or how we ended last year. Mm-hmm. There really isn't much of a change. You know, I think McLaren fell off maybe a little bit and Ferrari's looking better. Like the lap time changes from the race the year prior are pretty interesting. Like Ferrari's average lap time was like 2.2 seconds faster than they were last year, but like Red Bull's was like 1.8 seconds faster. So like they still are maintaining that gap. So all the cars are faster and Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren have made more gains than Red Bull has, but like that just goes to show how much an advantage Red Bull had last year. So it's not looking good for anyone wanting to challenge Max for the championship, but everywhere else, like during the race, I was like using my finger to like cover up the number one spot in the interval and just looking at the rest of the pecking order. And it was super tight. Like Carlos Sainz was as fast, like on race pace, same exact race pace as Sergio. And you know, Charles had his brake issues. Without that, he probably would have been just as fast. So it's competitive everywhere else except for the Dutchman, the Flying Dutchman.
So here we are back in the saddle here. Were you surprised that Charles still was not able? I mean, they went, that was the most exciting part of the race, I think, that 4.5 seconds when they were wheel to wheel and he and Carlos were wheel to wheel and Carlos passed him. And I just love the radio messages from guys with accents. Like, so and Carlos Sainz gets on there and goes, I have better pace than he does. And they're like, we are checking. And like, they do not want to relinquish the idea that Charles, because if Charles gets passed, then you get pouty Charles, right? And then you get vindictive Charles, and you have this crazy, like he gets pouty, and it's weird. And all these drivers have always been the best at all the things that they've done. And for the last however many years, depending on the equipment underneath you, See, this is why I always want the. This is why I want there to be an F2 type. I want the spec to be there. I know you probably disagree mm-hmm. with me. I know that there's something to the regulations of, hey, build a car and show us what you got, and here are the regulations. And it is kind of cool when they come out and they're a little bit different, and you like to see. But that creates, like, who is the best driver? Max Verstappen is obviously the best driver, but he's also in the best car, and that creates a really, really bad season for somebody who's trying to get into this thing, because he's going to win 20 of the 24 races at minimum, I feel like.
Yeah, I think F1 and Liberty Media has a big problem on their hands with Max's domination just kind of draining the momentum that the sport was accumulating over the last few years. You know, we talked about the Drive to Survive ratings plummeting a bit for this last season.
Did you finish the series, though, by the way?
I didn't finish it yet.
So maybe there's that. Part of the way, it's because there's actual racing going on, and once that happens, I have a hard time dialing in, because I'll end up watching, you know, highlights and things like that through the week. But the point is well taken.
Yeah. So I think they got to figure it out. 2026 is the big moment, right? And I think it sounds like there's just lots of conversations coming out of Bahrain to try and shake up the regulations for 2026 even more. But I mean, that's not very exciting to think, well, the answer might come in 3 years, when the answer was supposed to be the current regulations that were on for, you know, making the field more competitive. So they've got to figure things out, or else the wind is going to be completely taken out of the sails of all the growth that Formula One has experienced recently. So, but the off-track stuff might be what ends up leveling the playing field more than the on-track stuff, which we can get into. But it is a very critical moment right now along a lot of dimensions for Formula One.
So as Christian Horner is being crowned as the worst flirting, I think my kid would say it, he's got the least amount of riz.
Zero riz.
Like, on the one hand, you kind of go, he could go to his wife and go, I mean, I really didn't do that. I didn't really say that much, but
oh,
at the same
time.
So you have this wild stuff that's been revealed about Christian Horner now. And then on top of it, please explain what the battle is between the Max Verstappen camp, his, you know, really his manager, and his dad, Jos, who is as outspoken as anybody. What on earth is the fight between Christian Horner and Jos Verstappen, who obviously has a better relationship with his son than Christian Horner does? And is there a possibility that it gets bad enough to where Max Verstappen goes, I'm going to another team?
Dude, it seems like it. I mean, so the kind of what happened. So we recorded this time last week, and we're like, Christian, everything's been dismissed. It's over. The next day, right after, like, basically the first day of the season with free practice at Bahrain, the Google Drive gets sent out to everybody of the alleged conversations, photos, all that stuff. Okay. So we get into the weekend, and then it's, you know, the media documenting and reporting, like, there's a documented, like, argument in the paddock between Christian Horner and Jos. And then you see Jos talking to Toto.
Yep.
And then it's reported that they go to dinner together. And then after the race, I think it was either probably Sunday or Monday, Jos makes a statement to the media saying that the Red Bull team is getting torn apart from the inside over this controversy, and that, you know, Max should consider other options. And it's confirmed too that Toto has a conversation with Max over the weekend to fill that seat for Lewis Hamilton. And when he's pressed on it, he doesn't deny it. Toto doesn't deny it. So yeah, so you have Jos making these public statements about, like, Christian's got to go. And then you have Max just today saying to the media, like, look, I'm not going to pick sides. I love my dad. You know, Red Bull's also been really good to me, so I'm just going to focus on the performance side of things, which he has to say that, right? But I think it's a very real possibility that Jos, like, takes his ball and goes home and takes Max with him over to Mercedes if he doesn't like how things are shaking out. You know, we don't know where Adrian Newey lands on all of this.
That's
too.
What I was going to say. If you don't have, like Max is not interested in leaving a championship car. And actually, so the update, too, that I had seen earlier today was he was asked again about it, and Sky Sports had said, is there a circumstance where you wouldn't be racing for Red Bull in 2025? This is from today. Things must go really crazy, I guess, but that's not the target for everyone. So, and he sort of moved on from it. And, like, the thing that Red Bull has going for them is the fact that they do have Adrian Newey. I don't know what that means, like, contract-wise, if Adrian Newey – I mean – and Adrian Newey going to Mercedes, does that automatically put them in that conversation? I don't know, but obviously it's good to have that guy with you. But again, I'm not sure. All of this stuff happening, if everything had just stayed the same and there were no accusations of anywhere, no misconduct had happened anywhere, like Red Bull would be winning forever because Max would be in the seat and Adrian Newey would be designing the car every year. And as it stands, if Max leaves Red Bull, then you actually have, weirdly, like the only version of hope that I have is a person who wants to see a competitive championship happening. Now, I don't like Jos Verstappen.
Yeah.
All right. Let the record reflect that he's like, he's the he's one of the guys that I don't like. All right. And he just, aside from his past of whatever you want to accuse him of that he has been accused of, fine. But also, he just like, why? I hate when dads get involved with their sons to this level, right?
Yeah.
It feels like that little league coach, right? And you go, and Jos, what, got on one podium or something like that during his career? Like, I don't think he's even a Grand Prix winner at all. So it's not
he never won a Grand Prix.
No.
I think I looked it up today. He won like he earned like 17 points over 100 and some odd races.
Okay, so he's like the Martin Brundle of of dads in the paddock. But again, he's a loud dude, and Max is loyal to him, and so I get it. But you know, I don't like any of this whole thing except for that this from everything might come a more competitive situation for the sport maybe in the future because of the tumult.
Yeah. Lewis also today told, you know, when asked about it in the media, said that I think his quote was that dad's getting involved in like the, you know, this in your career is a very thin line to walk.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very diplomatic way to say it. But like you see his dad's been present and supportive, but he's not like his pseudo agent.
But I guarantee he probably had to be told at some point, like, hey, like let this stuff happen. And let the business side of it work out. Like, I can't have you being like my spokesperson. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of dads like that. Listen, I cover sports for a living. The amount of dads that want to get involved on the collegiate level is a lot. On the professional level, there is also a lot. And they have to have a team representative or somebody or an agent come up to them. The worst is when your parent wants to be your agent, too. That's
that's a recipe
ridiculous.
For disaster.
So yeah, I'm kind of with Lewis on it. It's just like, look, man, this is not a good place for Max to be in, for him to be negotiating off of the anger issues of Jos Verstappen with Christian Horner.
Yeah. Yeah. And going to your, like, you know, what are the possible ramifications of all of this? I mean, Red Bull has the greatest, likely what will be the greatest driver of all time. And what is already the greatest car designer of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And they could lose both of those guys over, like, they're picking Christian Horner over those two. And I mean, a team principal is important, but they're not as important as a driver and essentially your technical director. And so it just would be wild to me if Red Bull picks Christian over those two with everything that, I mean, it's all alleged, it's unconfirmed. But if what we all saw is true, he's got to go. He's got to go.
Yeah.
So it's going to be extremely interesting what happens.
Right.
And it might be what brings some sort of balance back to the sport, with Red Bull being so distracted by all of this in the meantime and potentially losing star talent over it.
So, man, all right. Well, and then there's the part of, I guess, that because the split of the ownership between the Thai group and the group in Austria, and the Thai group being a 51% owner, and apparently, according to some of these sources, the Thai group were the ones who were like, nah, man, we don't bend on this kind of stuff. Like, but they don't have the same regulations. They don't have the same – somebody was saying culturally it's not something that they understand like the UK and the US and a lot of, you know, these other countries in the European Union handle sexual harassment, sexual misconduct, all these things. And so it's like, no, we're keeping our guy and we're keeping this. Like they're like, we're keeping the whole band together. I don't care what happened. We're going to figure this thing out. And so there's that element too. And anyway, we haven't even talked about much racing except for the last race that had happened. Now, I will say too, the other thing that floated around today was and by the way, the accusations of maybe Yoss having also known the person or some sort of relationship with the person that's in question. Oh my goodness, like the drama, right? That could be going on at Red Bull. Now,
yeah, this turns into an episode of Days of Our Lives. If it's a love triangle. I cannot believe that's so insane.
It's wild. But I don't even know how to say this city. Is it Kidia City? Did you see this Fernando Alonso tweet?
No.
So Fernando tweeted out. So have you ever heard of the Kidia project that's been launched by Saudi Arabia?
Yep, the new racetrack.
New racetrack there. So Fernando Alonso puts out this like long PR, like it stunk of endorsement money and blah, blah, blah. I was like, wow, the Kidia racetrack will prove to be the jewel of the of all the races of F1, and you're going, oh, and people are like, blink twice, Fernando, if they if they've got the gun to your head, you know, like, and it just felt so funny that was happening. But I was like, oh my goodness, Saudi Arabia is gonna get another track, they're gonna get another race. And I thought, I would complain, except for, you know, we've got three races here in the US. But yeah, I don't know what the accusations are about Ben Suleiman and what his involvement has been with, like, to hear that he asked, apparently, allegedly, there's a whistleblower who said a lot of things, not the least of which was he asked not to certify, according to this whistleblower, not to certify the Las Vegas track. What on earth? Like, that was one of the most lucrative things that's ever happened to the sport.
Yeah, that one surprised me. He's accused of basically pressuring whoever's in charge of going and inspecting the track before they go have a race to say like, hey, find something that's going to get them not certified so we can axe this race, which is crazy. And then the other one was that he tried to put his, you know, toe on the scale to get the Alonso. There was a penalty that Alonso had last year where he had a 10-second penalty, and the crew touched the car during that 10 seconds. Like, they didn't work on it, they just touched it like to balance it, and then he got a 10-second penalty or something like that on top of it. But they say that he went to the stewards to get it overturned, which is like a big no-no.
Oh, of course.
So it's starting to feel like the FIFA stuff from however long ago right, where it just like reeks of corruption a little bit. And maybe it's not as bad yet, but it seems like it's going that direction. And yeah, when you see more and more of kind of the Saudi ownership and the Saudi or the kind of Saudi presence inside of Formula One, I think, you know, the rest of us start to get a little bit kind of uncomfortable with like where, what direction are they going to take the sport? Live Golf is, you know, for the purists of golf fans, like it's divided the sport a bit. So the new racetrack is, I guess, it's interesting. It looks like you asked ChatGPT to build like turn Mario Kart into a racetrack.
Right.
And I just don't know if that's going to produce great racing, but I had the same concerns about Vegas, ended up being a pretty good race. So maybe I should withhold judgment, but it looked, like all the drivers kind of posting like, this is amazing, felt all too coordinated.
Yeah. It's always funny to watch to see what the drivers think about it. And, you know, Lewis will obviously have his, you know, at some point he'll probably say something about another race being in the Middle East and in a country that has problems with civil liberties issues and things like that. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Are we missing all the other news stuff? Am I missing something? I feel like I'm missing something. Do you want to throw anything else out there that's a non-on-track situation or what?
Non-on-track. No, I think those are the big ones. The Yuki Daniel Ricciardo thing was probably my favorite moment of the weekend.
Oh, and everybody's worried, as if it's a shock that Yuki got fired up about something, like and cussed about some things. That was hilarious to me. But what ended up coming of it? Did we find anything else out except for that What was it? Yuki finished 14th and Daniel Ricciardo was 13th, but I'm effing faster than he is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They were, I mean, fighting hard for 12th, right? Is kind of silly, but it's, I mean, it sounds like the team order was established before the race. Well, based on that, like their relative strategies and that they knew that Ricardo was likely to put on softs in that last stint and he'd be coming. And if he's on softs, then let him by. Well, what actually ended up happening is that the race pace on hards and softs ended up being pretty much exactly the same, which is really strange.
That is wild.
So he wasn't like storming past Yuki, and when he did get around him, he didn't like sail off into the distance. But it's just super, I think unwise and immature of Yuki to throw a tantrum when it's like, dude, this might be your last year in F1. You have to be a team player, especially if you want to be on at Red Bull Racing and be Max's, you know, second driver.
Right.
You can't throw a fit about it. And then for those who didn't see it, because I don't think it was put on the, it wasn't on the broadcast. The highlights kind of came out later, but on the cooldown lap, Yuki dive bombed Daniel Ricciardo on the cooldown lap and locked up his brakes and like kind of swerved towards him and then drove real close to him afterwards, revving his engine to show his displeasure towards Daniel.
We've all done this on I-15. I get it. It's fine.
Yeah, road rage.
It is road rage with a $20 million vehicle. No problem. No problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the race weekend that is upcoming, are we on a normal schedule here? Are we going to be the next two? They're both, these are all Saturday races, right?
Yeah. So this weekend is a Saturday race. So Thursday morning or Thursday practice, Friday qualifying. So yeah, we get early racing this week again.
Actually works better for me. They're in Saudi Arabia, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix of 2024 at the Corniche Circuit, which I always love to hear Crofty always say. So, I mean, I don't know how this, all these tracks, I mean, that the Bahrain track versus this one here in Saudi Arabia, and it's a quick turnaround. The tire deg on the first race was heavy because that track is rough. What is Saudi Arabia as a Grand Prix like? I'm trying to remember if this will be a friendly track or more advantageous for anybody else on this one besides Red Bull, if it's going to be another easy 1-2 for Max and Checo.
Yeah, this Saudi's pretty different from Bahrain. It's the second longest circuit after Las Vegas, but it's like it's shaped like a squirrely pencil. Like it's super long with kind of like hairpins at each end and then a lot of high speed S's in between. I think it has the most corners of technical corners of all the tracks, but there are a lot of them are just kind of high speed S's, not like super sharp corners. So very high speed track, I think it's probably the highest average speed or one of the highest average speeds. You know, we've had three races there. Lewis won the first one and then Red Bulls won the next two. Sergio won last year and he's been on pole twice. So he's pretty strong here. I think it'll even the playing field relative to Bahrain. You know, cars that do well in medium to low downforce will have an advantage, which historically has been kind of Ferrari's strong suit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I'm looking forward to it. It's actually one of my more favorite tracks on the calendar.
I'm partial to the ones where it's at night. I really am. I love the lights on. I love the like there's a different look to it. And for some reason, I don't know, the cars look cooler for some at night. I don't know.
Yeah, I love it too because it's really narrow, so it looks like, you know, Luke Skywalker flying the Death Star trench. Like there's just super narrow, fast.
Yes.
The one thing too is that there's no runoff area. It's a street circuit. So there's no runoff. It's just walls on each side where Bahrain, I think Crofty shared some stat that there was like over 40,000 square meters of runoff area, which who knows what that actually means. It's probably a very large number and it's probably over 1 million square feet. So basically in Bahrain, you make a mistake like Logan Sargeant did where I guess he didn't really make a mistake. Apparently his brake bias glitched. But you run off, you got tons of space to stop, get it fixed, get back on, and you don't cause a safety car. But at Jeddah, that's not the case. If you make one little error, you're in the wall, and that's a safety car, if not a red flag.
Was this the circuit where Max was putting together like the most perfect lap ever and just barely put that tire into the wall, and it just ruined it. And it would have been the most crazy lap ever done at that circuit.
Yeah, yep, that's what I was going to mention. That was the first race there. It was 2021 when Max and Lewis were tied for the championship, or pretty. He had a small marginal lead on Lewis, and he was on pace to get the pole. And everyone was watching him. I think they were interviewing Alonso during it. So Alonso, was on camera. But he was watching the live feed, and so we got his reaction real time. But yeah, he just barely put a wheel off, and missed it by a few millimeters, and that was game over. So I like it. I think it's a pretty exciting track.
Okay. If this weekend goes exactly how you plan, how is it going to shake out? Is this going to be another place that we see a Red Bull 1-2 and then maybe a Ferrari sneaking up there? Has Mercedes said that they're bringing an upgrade this weekend of some sort. They seem excited about it. It's like, oh yeah. But so did Fred Vasseur. Ferrari said they have a little something up their sleeve as well. We're going to be relying on any type of that data, I feel like, every race to feel that there's going to be some semblance of, you know, I think Max after the last race said it. He goes, look, it's pretty rare that it happens. I was like, no, it's not. It's pretty rare that it happens that everything goes exactly according to plan. I mean, it was basically a perfect race. And it was like, dude, this was all of 2023. We had to watch this happen. And so very few times that we saw anything deviate on that last race, and he led from the word go. And I don't know if it's going to be any different this weekend, but will the order change behind the Red Bull?
Yeah, I think Ferrari's still the strongest. My pick is still Carlos Sainz over Charles. I think he showed that this last weekend too. I think he stands the best in anybody not in a Red Bull car. Williams could be good. Williams could, you know, they didn't have an amazing weekend. They had some, all the Mercedes powered cars had some issues over the weekend with cooling and kind of some other random stuff. So hopefully they get that figured out. And Williams, I believe Albon had a really good race here last year. So if he can park himself at the front of a DRS train, I don't think anyone's going to get around him. I think everyone will do their best to catch Red Bull. And I think these off-track distractions will have some sort of mental effect on the team as a whole, maybe not on Max in the car, but you know, it's hard to balance all of that stuff and the drama happening within the team and, you know, still doing your job. So I think they're vulnerable. I would say that they're limping maybe a little bit, and somebody could take advantage of that if they put a foot wrong.
Okay, predictions of this weekend's podium then.
I'm going to say Sergio. I'm just going to say he repeats.
Oh, wow.
Sergio repeats over Max, and then Carlos gets another podium.
I'm not as hopeful about I feel like Checo, everyone has just sort of, and pardon the pun, but they feel like they've checked out a little bit on him. They're like, I don't believe anything in this guy. And I'm a little bit the same way, because it was the most boring and most quiet second place that I've ever seen in my entire life. And so I'm going to say Max still gets the win. I'm going to say Checo actually struggles, and he'll get third. And how about this one for a second place? Your guy, George Russell. There you go.
Okay.
So you've got a Mercedes is going to figure some things out. George Russell is going to have a decent race, and he's going to be second to Max. And then you're going to see Checo in third.
I'm gonna bold predict points for Haas. I think Haas is faster than they think.
Nobody's gonna feel bad about that. Like I felt bad during the episode with Gunter, because it was just like so many things, because you know what happens, like everything is sad. Everything was sad the entire episode. Him doing the book tour and all that, and man, he is one of the more beloved characters, and it was a loss for the. And he didn't die, by the way. If you're just turning into the, he was just let go by.
He's still very much around.
He's very much around. Oh my goodness. Okay, Dan, another one in the books here. Anything else to add? What are we supposed to be watching? Any off-track stuff that we're supposed to be interested in?
Oh man, my brain's fried. It's just so much. Oh gosh, if Max goes to Mercedes, that. will be just, I mean, even more unexpected than Lewis going to Ferrari.
Oh my goodness.
But honestly, the sport needs it. They need some type of shakeup.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Whatever happens this weekend, even if I just look the reliability, whatever. Give me a DNF of Max and make it more interesting. All right. For Dan Jimenez, I'm Alex Keery. You can always download the podcast wherever you find your fine podcast. You can also tell somebody else. As we gain more followers week after, or more listeners week after week here, we appreciate everybody listening to the program. So for Dan Jimenez, I'm Alex Keery. This is Mode Push, an American view of F1. We'll be back again next week.